Larry Olson. I am moderating for this session. I'm a past chair of the School Health Education and Services section. And that isn't why this got accepted. Trust me, because these are all blind reviews. And my co-presenter, it's unfortunate that APHA doesn't put in the program all the co-presenters and so forth. It's really kind of too bad. And even to the fact that their names aren't in the back of the program. So that may be one of the things that we want to do in the future, is try and see if we can make that change. At any rate, I am a professor of health education at AT Still University. And my co-presenter is Chris Lettingham, who is the current chair of the, again, that isn't what caused this to be accepted. But Chris is the current chair of the program. He's the interim chair of the health education program at the University of Texas at Brownsville. And if he wants to go into all of the stuff about the merger that they're going into with the community college, I'll let him do that. But we thought it might be interesting for this particular kind of a session to talk about the process that we go through in terms of getting abstracts accepted. A couple of quick questions. How many of you have submitted an abstract anywhere in the last, let's say, 3 years? Put your hands up. Okay. If you have had your abstract accepted, come on, this is a little exercise too. If you've had your abstracts accepted, keep your hand up. If you've had an abstract rejected, put your hand down. You've never had one rejected in the last 3 years. Good for you. So you should be, I'll sit out here and you guys. A number of us have submitted a number of these different kind of abstracts, but what Chris and I thought we would do is go through the process that we use for our particular section, and it's really pretty much the same process in all of the different sections that we have at APHA. So I'll move over to the side so I can see these two as we go through this. We have no conflicts of interest to disclose. We're just trying to get everybody to be successful. That's our... Why is this kind of a thing important? Well, APHA, as we know, is probably the largest meeting of its kind in the world. The last numbers I heard, 11,500 pre-registered. They expect another 1,500 online to register while we're here. 13,000 people. Well, this is an opportunity to showcase your research. And so what we want to do, your research or programs, and it's an opportunity to become known. How many of your students? Your students? Oh, terrific. Okay. Good. Okay. Past history. Chris, you want to talk a little bit about this one?
Well, history. The last 2 years, I've been the program planner, lots of stuff. So I'm the guy who gets to look at all the abstracts, look at all the ratings, and decide, okay, how do I make this look like a session? In 2013, we had 192 abstracts submitted, which is pretty good for our section. It sounds like a lot. It is. And we only accept 112, the 58.3 acceptance rate. So that means there's a lot of people out there who submitted and they got that letter. Sorry, not this year. This year we had more abstracts submitted, 204, but we only accepted 108. We lost some space because we're in a smaller venue. So our acceptance rate went down. A lot more people were angry that they didn't get their abstract accepted. And I had people who were past chairs of our section, people I've known for years, emailing me, how come I wasn't accepted? It wasn't rated high.
Yeah, what does that tell you about the review process?
Blind review process works.
Nobody knows who submitted what.
Well, I do, but...
But his reviews don't count.
I know who rated what.
Well, why do we have this drop? Chris already mentioned one of the things. Fewer slots are allocated in the section. The meeting has been shortened because people say, hey, we'd rather go a little bit longer in the day and have fewer number of days. And that means you have fewer slots available. Fewer slots available. Greater competition when you have fewer slots. Makes sense, doesn't it? So what does that do in terms of the quality? The bar keeps going up, doesn't it? And we'll talk a little bit about some of the strategies, too. Well, what's the process we use? Everything is done online. It's submitted online. We'll not accept anything by fax, Federal Express, Pony Express, smoke signals. It's all online, and it's done through contacts. And the process isn't that bad. Right? We released a call in January. Ta-da, it's coming up. And in that month and a half. Actually, the call is actually going to be released in December, I just heard. I'm on the education board. We just found this out. The call will be released in December. The abstracts will be due probably by mid-January. So stuff you're doing right now is the kind of stuff that you're going to be presenting the following year. Okay? Be watching for that. There is also a call for reviewers. How many of you in here have served as a reviewer for one of the sections for AKHA?
How many want to?
Raise your hand. That's why we have your name. Okay? All right. Upon the closing of the submission of the abstracts, and why don't you talk about that process real quick, Chris?
Okay, once the abstracts are off, once you submit, they're just put in a holding pattern. And then we've got a new system where, based upon the interest area of the reviewer, or their area of expertise, I hit a button and all the abstracts get randomly assigned to people. Now, if you submit something and your sister submits, you could get hers by chance. Not very likely. But that random assignment process, and each reviewer gets about between 10 and 15 abstracts. Each abstract's reviewed at least 3 times. And we take an average of the scores. And we look to see who the high marks are, and that's what gets in the program. However, every once in a while, like, I look through all the accepted ones, and I don't always just look at the average. Because the cut points are there to be helpful. Sometimes that average, somebody rated it a 10, somebody gave it a 7, somebody gave it a 1. Because they clicked the wrong button. But they didn't tell me about it. So there's a little bit of, there's a human element to the abstract review process as well. I like to tell people that, so it's not totally computer automated. Now, once the scores are submitted, we set that cut point, and that's our first level. But then we go back and look to make sure there wasn't any errors. And I'll tell you all, the cut point was set by me this year, and everything above it, below it, if something got switched, it's all on me. So if somebody's really mad, my name is Larry Olson. Okay, it's a great process. Automated, a lot easier than it used to be.
Basically what they'll do is once all the scores are in, you can put a cut point, let's say you put a cut point at 7, they'll say, okay, a cut point at 7 and above, you'll have 22% of your abstract will be accepted. If you go to 6, it'll be 33%. If you go to 1, all of them will be accepted. So we start to see approximately how many slots we have. And it's important to understand, for example, in a program like this, we can have four, maybe 5 if you only give each presenter 15 minutes. Here's a tip. Posters. If we have one poster session, that's 10. You can take 10 for posters. Okay. So you might want to think about that if you're going to submit. Okay. The session allocations are made by AKHA. As I indicated, 4 to 5 per session. Chris takes these things and puts them into stacks, and he puts a title on each one of them. And the accepted abstracts are tentatively put into the available slot. So it's a big, long process. Before they had this automated system, I remember when I was doing the program planner, we took all of the abstracts, we had about 200 of them, and we were in a hotel. And it was myself and Bill Sissel and Terry Wessel. And we took the abstracts and we literally sorted them out on the floor and looked at them and put them in the stacks. The system is much easier now. It's much easier now. So, highest scored abstracts are accepted. Lower scored abstracts are not automatically rejected. Because, what if somebody puts the same abstract? This is supposed to be cut, but sometimes it's not. What if they put the same abstract in two different places and accept it in two different things? Oops, somebody's got to go. So what we do is we waitlist abstracts. Things happen. Somebody gets in an accident, somebody gets sick, and they say, gee, I can't come. All of a sudden, my funding is removed, or I've got to go to Swahili land, I've been changed, you know. So these are waitlisted. So acceptance letters are then sent to the lead authors, who have to notify everyone else in their research team, or their program team. And I missed the last one that said it on there. That, and the lead authors have to indicate their acceptance and said, if you're accepted, we'll be here. And I'll tell you, one of the things that's tough, please, folks, never do this. And some of us have done a lot of these kind of things. If you say you're going to be at the program and you're going to present it, be there and present it. In a lot of organizations, if you don't show, it's a 3 to 5 year ban. Gone. So when if Olson puts one in and they didn't show up the previous year, Lettingham is going to say, Olson, gone. This is going to be automatically triaged out. It won't be sent for review. It's just gone. It's important to understand that. You have a professional obligation if you say, I want to put this in. By golly, make sure that you've got something so that you can go. Okay. How do you be successful? Well, we already gave you the first part. Be aware of when the call is released. The call will come out in December. They're due in January. Hang on. Read all the instructions within the call. They're very, very clear. Very, very clear. Contact the program planner if you have questions. You can contact Chris or any of the other people who are listed as a program planner. Start early. You can look at the abstracts that are online. You can get an idea of what's out there. Get an idea of what you should put in there. Follow all the instructions. It is amazing that we will see these things. They're half done. Ta-da-ta-da. Gone. The instructions aren't followed. If it says put things in upper and lower case, don't put them all in capital letters. Gone. Don't know how to follow instructions. To be very honest, people are looking for reasons to reject rather than reasons to accept. It's a fact of life. We were just in a conference in Portland, Oregon, and there was a guy there from NIH, and I said that, and he says, yeah, but you didn't hear that from me. Okay, how many of you have been NIH reviewers? Anybody? That's one of the instructions to give you. Look for reasons not to score, rather than for reasons to score. Follow instructions. Okay. Do introspection. Take a look and say, if I got this, what would I do? Would I accept it? Would I not? Add your abstract. Determine the area that your abstract meets. You'll see sessions. You'll see areas. And determine if you're going to accept any kind of presentation. If you put down poster, you may get put into an oral slot. There's no guarantee that you're going to get the kind of session you want.
Yeah, I want to make a sidebar on that one. Remember a couple years ago, or last year when I was doing the program, someone submitted one for an oral session, and it scored high enough, and not high enough to really garner an oral session, so I stuck it in a poster. I didn't recognize the name. Someone told me later, that was one of the top researchers in the field. I'm like, really? That abstract sucks. We accepted it, but it got a poster. She withdrew.
Yeah.
It happens.
Okay, write good objectives, you know, learner outcomes, tables don't talk, sessions don't present things, people present things, it's amazing, these are reasons for rejection, so make sure that you write good objectives, and understand that if you put things, Eric's been in this kind of a situation where he has a whole group of people putting something together, and if they don't connect them, if they don't put a note in there and say, hey, this should be connected with this one, should be connected with this, should be connected. Quite possible that two of the three or four will be done. So each one in a symposia is reviewed separately. What do you include? We're going to start to have to go pretty quick here. Authors, the complete information, have a catchy title, have it be relevant. Why did you do this project? Why did you do this study? Why is it important? And these, I would suggest, we suggest that you actually put these in the title, the background, purpose, significance, and methods. The design, the population, the instrumentation, IRB approval. If we don't say something about IRB, is it approved by IRB? It's probably going to get scored lower. Data gathering, if appropriate. And data collection, again, if appropriate. So be appropriate with what you present. What are your findings? What are your conclusions? And this is an important one. How is this going to further school health? It could be an international presentation, but if you don't tie it to the mission of the section, to which you're sending it, it's going to probably get rejected. And we put this on a kind of a teeter-totter. Here's why you get rejected. Incomplete, lack of relevance, it's poorly written, grammar and spelling, unbelievable. We used to get them and then we'd have the coffee cup rings on the paper. That was uncool. Lack of relevance to the section. The scope is too limited. How will it further school health isn't specified and complete instruction for it followed? These are all reasons for rejection.
I gotta say, some of the abstracts I've seen that were flat out rejected, they didn't even run spell check. They didn't think through their objectives. I mean, smart objectives, we all learn that nowadays in our health ed programs, in our nursing programs. If the objectives are horrible, the abstract can be okay, but the objectives don't make sense, probably not going to get accepted.
You can look at this real fast. We've got a couple of minutes. Overuse of jargon, incorrect words, on versus about. People will say something, I'm going to write a paper about lettuce. I'm saying, how do you get the ink to stick on the, on lettuce. How do you get the ink to stick on the lettuce leaf? You're not going to write a paper on lettuce. You're going to write a paper about lettuce. Effect versus affect, use versus utilize, dialogue versus talk. We're going to dialogue about that. Whatever happened to the four-letter word called talk? Ending sentences and prepositions, pronoun and seating issues. A person and their something. Wrong. Okay. People will say, gee whiz, are you a grammarian? Yeah, actually, we are. We are. Following instructions, proofread. There is no excuse. How might this program be done in other locales with other populations? A couple of sentences. Here's how it can be replicated. Appeal to a broad audience. The broader the audience, the greater the appeal. And have a non-author, somebody who doesn't really know about the study, review the .non thing. Do it in Microsoft Word, external to the submission process. You can do all your spell checks, and all you have to do is copy and paste. Bingo. Conclusions. Competition is going to increase in the future. Contact the program chair with questions. We want people to be successful. Follow the four C's. Complete, concise, clear, cohesive. Pretty simple stuff. So, thanks, and to report senior submissions in 2015. We'll catch questions at the end. Thank you.